The following program is paid for by Absolute Mortgage, a division of Pinnacle Capital Mortgage Corporation. Absolute Mortgage Company, NMLS number 81395, and Washington CL number 81395, is an equal opportunity housing lender. Tina Mitchell, MLO number 145420, is a licensed loan originator with Absolute Mortgage. Visit AbsoluteLoans.com or call 888-90-HOMES for cost information.
You're listening to The Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell. Sponsored by Absolute Mortgage, a division of Pinnacle Capital Mortgage Corporation. Now, in the studio, local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome to The Money Hour on 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, July 4th. Oh my gosh, 4th of July. Happy Independence Day to everyone out there, all my listeners. I hope that you're having a safe time, maybe enjoying some of this beautiful sunshine. This is your host, Tina Mitchell, and mortgage expert, and here to talk with you about money. The show's all around making money, how to spend money, how to save money, and just have a better quality of life for you and your family. If you're hearing my show at a different time or day, you're listening to a rebroadcast, or I'm here to answer any questions or connect you with the guest I have in studio, feel free to call into the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. And my lineup in studio today, I have Eric Tinglem with Trident Realty Group Northwest. He is myself and real estate expert. So we're going to be discussing the real estate market over in his arena and kind of overall what's happening here with real estate. Also in studio, first time guest, Gary Castle with Mountaintop Advisors, LLC. What does it really take to become financially smart? What should you be doing with your money? Well, that's the conversation I'm going to have with Gary today. Again, great information and great guest in studio. For more information, please hold on to the number throughout the entire show, because I know you're going to want to talk with my guest. 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. And let's start out the show today, as always, with a little money chat.
Money. Money.
Sometimes during money chat, I talk about credit. I talk about financial tips, but today I'm going to talk about my own personal arena, which is mortgages. So a lot of changes are happening in the mortgage industry, and there's been a lot of changes since the financial meltdown in 2008. I want to just kind of start there. If you think about it, would you want to relive the crisis that we went through? I bet your answer would be no. So let's start out with why we're in the situation or why we're in the regulations that we are right now. Before things were set up in being regulated with the lenders got to make their own rules. Banks could decide what they wanted to do and how they wanted to lend. That didn't work out so well for us because we had a financial meltdown. It was a disaster, and I think everybody, I don't know anybody that I've talked to, including myself, that was not affected by that. So when the government stepped in, then they decided to put together some regulations and rules that now all lenders and banks have to follow, set up by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which the secondary market is owned by the government still, and they decide what needs to be completed in order to be in compliant for mortgages. Now, since the crisis, there has been constant changes and updates and more documentation. And we just recently had another one that's coming into play. It's supposed to hit August 1st, but there might be an extension on that, which would be a little bit exciting in the mortgage arena. But if just think about it, when you're asked for a lot of documentations, which you will be, when you kind of think the process doesn't feel like it's too much fun, which it will not be, just look at the positive side of it. If we weren't in this environment, we could be at risk of having a financial meltdown again. So we just want to make sure that everything is getting verified, things are double checked, the T's are crossed, I's are dotted. So I want to go through some tips to help the process be successful. Now, I just gave you tip one, really, is just being understanding what's happening in the mortgage industry, not really worrying about why things are being asked for, but the fact that they just need to be, they need to be, or they're required to have them. The bank is not making up, again, the regulations are asking for the documents because they don't have to. The underwriter is not just asking for documents. It's because it's a requirement in order to close that loan so that they can continue lending to new homeowners. So get all the documentations that are documents that are asked for. Understand, too, that you want to expedite and turn things around as quickly as possible. So as documents are requested, same day if you can do that. If not, by the end of the next business day. Anything longer than that, you're going to start having some issues with the timing and the closing timelines. And the reason why is because things are moving really, really quickly, but there's additional documentations that are still being requested. So updated documents, just keep everything that comes in from the time that your offer is accepted or from the time that you get pre-approved before you make an offer all the way until closing. Keep all of your documents because you have to continue to update the documents all the way through the closing period. So there shouldn't be a reason that you should be asked for a pay stub right at the closing table, because if you know up front that you need your pay stubs all the way through the end of the closing process, you should have already have actually scanned and emailed that document over. So just keep sending all the updated documents, updated asset documents, updated pay stubs, anything that comes in, send those over. New debt or credit cards, you don't want them. You don't want to open any new types of credit at all. Even if your mortgage consultant congratulates you on such a low debt-to-income ratio, which means the bank will lend you a lot more money than what you would actually spend, which that can happen because the lender is lending at a 45% debt-to-income ratio. So they're very forgiving on debt-to-income ratio. So maybe you're approved at $500,000 and you're buying a $400,000 home. It's not uncommon. Even though you have that room in your debt-to-income ratio, you do not want to go out and incur new debt and especially open new cards because it triggers to go back in an underwriting stage. So if they see that you've had a big purchase on your credit or that you've actually opened a new credit card, at the very end of the process, what's called a soft pull, your credit report is pulled. Hard pull meaning it affects your credit score, soft pull it does not. So they do a soft pull credit as soon as the documents get back from escrow to ensure that there's no new debt or big purchases that you've made. So if you have, it's going to step you all the way back to the underwriter process. So what that means is you're going to be okay debt to income ratio in this example, but you're not going to be okay on your closing date and the loan is not going to close on time. So what happens if the loan doesn't close on time? Then you need to get permission from the seller to extend that closing date. Now, I don't know in this market if you can have any guarantees that the seller is going to extend the closing date, because maybe there's another offer behind you that's willing to pay more money than you've already agreed to on the contract. Maybe you've already released your finance contingency, which means that earnest money that you put down, actually, they could keep it if they don't want to extend the closing date. So it gets really tricky in not being able to meet those commitments. Now, obviously, in not incurring new debt, if in another example, you're at a close debt to income ratio, you don't want to push that over. So no new debt at all. No, don't open new credit cards. And I know it's kind of tempting because you've just purchased a new home. So there's a lot of cards out there. You get free interest and at the furniture store, if you put it on credit. So go ahead and open the credit card and get that free interest and get your new furniture. It's not something that you want to do. Next is life changes. So life changes, job, profession, if you're thinking of making any changes, not to say that it would be an issue, but it could very well be an issue and a big issue. So you want to check with your mortgage consultant first before making any employment changes. So things that come into play that could be a challenge is the timing of it. Again, if you're making an employment change during the closing process, you won't be able to provide a paycheck prior to closing. That can be an issue depending on the type of loan that you're going with. If you change from one industry to another, if the comp structure and how your pay changes, there's a lot of different things that could be affected by making a job change in the middle of the closing process. Also getting married, hopefully you're not getting a divorce during a closing process, but life changes. You don't want to make any type of life changes without checking with your mortgage consultant first to see how it's going to affect the closing process. Deposits. This can be a big part of the inconvenience of documentation is any money that's coming and going from your accounts have to be documented. So you want to be really careful with making sure that you're communicating with your mortgage consultant, money that's coming in and out of your account. Now, what I'm talking about is things that are not direct deposits. Obviously, if your paycheck is direct deposited in your account, if you've, you know, had money coming in that you were transferring from one of your other asset class and it's directly depositing from one account to another, that's an easy paper trail. You don't want any cash deposits. If you loaned some money, some friends some money, and now you want to get it back because you're buying a new house and you want to buy that new furniture or those new appliances, you want to wait. So just knowing that anything that comes into your account has to be documented and paper trailed. And a paper trail just means it comes from an acceptable source of either gift funds from your family member or money that is your own funds. Now, a lot of times you may think selling something would be considered your own funds. It actually isn't unless you can paper trail it. So you can't just go sell a car and say you sold a car. You've got to go through and show the title, show the blue book value. So there's a lot of documentation and paper trail involved in that. Liquidating funds, just again, this kind of goes into the deposits into your account. As you're making liquidation of any funds, just save all of the documentation and paper trail of doing that. Sometimes people, first-time homebuyers especially, are borrowing from their retirement funds for down payment. That's fine, but you just need to be able to paper trail and save all the documents. Also, that the paper trail is important when you're getting gift funds from a family member. So depending on what type of loan you're with, and this is a conversation you're having with your mortgage consultant, on government loans, you have to be able to verify that the donor, the person that's gifted you the funds, have the ability to gift that money, which means that you're going back and actually paper trailing their accounts. So not only are you showing where the money came from and the paper trail from their account into your account, but you're also showing the history of that donor's account that goes back 60 days. So that can be a little tricky if you're not communicating and having these conversations with your mortgage consultant up front. Signing date and closing cash that you need to close. It's always a good idea just to know your figures are going to be within a few hundred dollars up or down. You don't have the exact dollar amount until you get a call from escrow, but it's pretty regulated, so you're not having additional fees that are surprised and popped in there anymore. That went away after the crisis. But it's still, there can be a few hundred dollars here or there, so just know that, and you don't have the exact dollar amount until the time that you're going to go in and sign. Now, unfortunately, you don't know the exact date that you're going to be signing because everything happens at the end of the process. So typically an escrow company is not going to pre-schedule a signing. They're going to schedule a signing once the loan documents are actually in their hand. And the reason why is because the lending industry has not done a really good job with under-promising and over-delivering, they've done a really good job with over-promising and under-delivering. So letting the escrow company know the documents were going to be there at a certain time, then they don't actually show up. And so the escrow company would have to reschedule. Now, so because of that, the escrow companies wait to get the scheduled signing on the calendar until they have the loan documents in hand. So just let your employer know. Typically, your signing is going to be anywhere from 2 to 3 business days prior to closing. That actually is going to be changing with some of the new regulations that are coming in. It's probably going to be 5, maybe 6 days prior to closing, maybe even 7 days because of the waiting period that's going to be coming up. But you just need to let your employer know up front that you're going to have some time off, but you're not really sure when it's going to be. So as long as you can prepare for that, it makes it a little bit easier. When you do go to escrow and sign your final paperwork and bring in that check, it is going to be a cashier check or wired funds. So you want to make sure that you're not coming in with a personal check. If you're doing wire funds, make sure you're checking with the escrow company to find out, or checking with your bank as if there's any hold on those wired funds, because that could be an issue for timing as well. And then a spouse. If you're purchasing a property on your own, or for some reason a spouse is not going to be available possibly for signing, maybe they traveled for business and there's no way that they could know for sure that they're going to be in town unless you give them an exact date, then you can set up a power of attorney. If you have a spouse that's not going to be on the loan, you could set up a power if you have a spouse that's not going to be on the loan, you have to know there's going to be certain documents that they actually have to sign. So just communicate with your mortgage consultant, have a conversation about those as well. And then last, if you plan on taking any trips outside of an extended weekend, like the 4th of July weekend, everybody that's in process to close, it's okay if you're going to be taking a three-day weekend. But other than that, don't leave town during closing. Make sure that your vacations are scheduled after you move into your house or before you have an offer accepted. If not, there's just you need to communicate up front and what that's going to do for your closing date, because you need to make sure that you're available during the closing process for any additional documentation that's going to be required throughout the process. So that's just a little tips on the closing process to give you an idea of what you can do as a consumer to help up front. Know the right questions to ask your mortgage consultant. If you're working with somebody established and good in the industry, they're going to be having this conversation with you. But it's kind of nice to give a little bit of a reminder of those tips out to any of those of you that are purchasing a home. If you have any questions, as always, you can feel free to call into the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150, or online at themoneyhour.com. Coming up next on the Money Hour, real estate's a hot topic today, and there's a lot of advice on how to navigate through the environment. But the wrong advice could be the biggest financial mistake that you make. So you want to have someone that knows what they're talking about and an expert. That's who I have in studio, Eric Tinglem with Trident Real Estate Realty Group Northwest, right here on 1150 AM KKNW after this short break.
The 1,200,000 women and men of Rotary have accomplished extraordinary things. They've taught millions of people to read, worked toward world peace, and have nearly eradicated a crippling childhood disease from the face of the planet. But each of those 1,200,000 women and men know they could accomplish so much more if only they were 1,200,001. Find out what an impact one person can make. Learn about Rotary at Rotary.org.
This is the Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell, right here on 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, July 4th show. Happy Independence Day to all my listeners. Hope you guys are having a great extended weekend. I built a network of elite industry professionals every week, sharing their knowledge and expertise to you, my listener. If you're hearing my show at a different time or day, you're listening to a rebroadcast, but you can call into the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150, or online at themoneyhour.com. And in studio right now, Eric Tinglem with Trident Realty Group Northwest, here to discuss what's happening in today's real estate market, a little bit about what's going on in the South End. Eric, thank you so much for coming back in studio.
Well, Tina, it's always a pleasure, and I appreciate the invitation.
He is my expert on the South End, and a little bit different sometimes in what's happening in the South End to what we're seeing here in the East Side. A little bit about Eric, 25 years in the real estate industry, top 10% in production in Pierce County over the past 7 years. Retired former flight engineer with a 34-year career in the USAF and USAF Reserve. Coached high school football in Pierce County for 20 years and sits on the board of two nonprofits supporting youth development. And 75% of Eric's business is working with both retired vets and active duty military in and around the Puget Sound. And he is the team leader for Trident Realty Northwest. Again, Eric, excited to have you have a conversation with you, and especially a little bit about what's different going on in your market. So lag behind the King County boom. Now, is it looking kind of the same? I mean, is the difference between what's happening in the South End versus over in Seattle on the East Side? What are you seeing?
It always has, Tina, for the past however many years. With the barometer for the real estate industry starts and ends right here in King County. We in Pierce County then are the result of the dynamics up in King. And so when we see double-digit year-over-year increases in price, the word gentrification comes to mind. And the middle class then somewhat becomes priced out, not unlike, say, like San Francisco.
Yes.
Where you have the incredibly wealthy elite and then the subsidized housing, but the middle class kind of disappears. And so what happens is they start to move south looking for more affordable housing.
Yeah.
But there is a period of time, there's a time lag. In addition to that, the other real compelling reason to move south is retirement. Mm-hmm. And we know that for the past few years, the predictors, year in, year out, divorce, health, loss of job, mm-hmm. Marriage, but more importantly, retirement, that baby boom
yes.
generation. People are now starting to take advantage of these numbers for the sale of their home here in King County.
Makes total sense. So they're selling, they're getting ready to retire, so they're selling their home in King County and moving to something that's more affordable because they don't need to be right in the city or...
Exactly. But yeah. they want to continue to enjoy the Northwest lifestyle
and
be accessible to those things that they've known and loved over the years.
So what? And I think, you know, a little bit of it, well, it's a big benefit to be in an area that you can actually wait to see what happens here. And then, you know, it's going to flow down and follow. Mm-hmm. So that's great. You can have a little bit of a more prediction of what your market's going to do. What is that lag time? I mean, what are you typically looking at?
You know, it's been approximately a year.
Uh-huh.
You know, if we take a look at where the inventory was in Pierce County, say a year and a half ago, it was far more substantial than it is today.
Yes.
And the same thing, King County was the same. I pulled up some numbers this morning, and they're rather startling. Today, as of today, this morning, there were 3,366 active single-family residential homes for sale in King County.
Okay.
Conversely, there were 2,948 single-family homes available in Pierce County, a county that has a third, if not a fourth, the population of King.
Yes.
Now, having said that, though, the solds in the last 30 days in King County were 2,175.
Okay.
Versus Pierce County, 12,050. So here's where the math goes in.
I was going to say, help break that down. And,
you bet.
Okay.
It's called an absorption rate.
Okay.
So in other words, if we were to take a look at the total inventory available,
okay.
how long would it take at the present rate of sales for there to be no houses?
Okay.
The number in King County is one and a half months of inventory.
Wow.
That is off the scale. I mean, you can't...
Have we seen that before, Eric? For all your years and 25 years in the industry, do you know?
You know, this has probably been the most robust market that I personally have ever seen, I must confess. So by comparison, if you take a look at Pierce, and I should have pulled up Snohomish, but I'm sure the numbers are similar, we only have 2.36 months of inventory.
Okay.
So when you take a look at that, we are now in Pierce County experiencing... multiple offers,
yes.
cash offers.
Yep.
I have a listing right now. When I get back, I'm going to have to send out that, you know, to the offers that are coming in, we're going to have to ask for highest and best. Now, having said that, that creates yet another problem because we have buyers with money, but when there's financing involved,
yes.
who determines the value? The appraisal.
And you know what? I'm glad that you brought that up, Eric, because my understanding is on the south end, there's a little bit more of a challenge in the appraisal arena than what we've seen up here in this market, in the Seattle market. We're not having as many challenges. But now all of a sudden, in the last 2 months, I mean, it's been incredible what's happening in the market and trying to be able to determine value. So what challenges are you guys having?
Sure. Well, let's face it. There's a lot more money in King County than there is in Pierce County.
Yes.
Our largest source of income, and a lot of people don't know this figure, but it's retired military as a single source.
Okay.
Okay. After that, active duty military with JBLM.
Okay.
So most of our buyers are depending upon either VA or FHA,
uh-huh.
and sometimes FHA with DPA or down payment assistance.
Yes, yep.
So when you look at that, we are really tied to the appraisal process.
Yes.
When you take a look at King County and you have a conventional loan,
yep.
and you're putting 30%
exactly.
down,
mm-hmm.
well then, you know, the appraisal really is irrelevant at that
yes,
point in time.
Yeah.
Now, you know, having said that, I've had appraisals all over. I had a really cute Craftsman in the North End, which is a very mm-hmm. coveted area, the Proctor area in Tacoma.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we listed it at 249. It got appraised at 270. So that was...
But that's unusual.
Very unusual.
Yes, okay.
And now I have three VA appraisals that have come in low of late.
So what are you... So three in late, how long?
In the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, so that's a lot. I mean, that's an issue. So what are you seeing? Because we're just starting to experience this, which is kind of, we're not used to it, having the low appraisals. Mm-hmm. What are your sellers doing? I mean, our sellers don't think that it's real. And, you know, they feel, well, we just put our property back on the market and we'll try it again. And you've got multiple offers, people that are actually didn't get the house that are still coming in and wanting that house. What are you seeing your sellers do when it comes back to that renegotiation? Because if you're listening right now, if you're in the process of getting a home and the appraisal comes in low, as long as you haven't waived your finance contingency, then you've got options. I mean, either the seller agrees to lower the price, you agree to pay the higher amount because the bank's only going to lend on what the actual value comes in, the lesser of the two, or neither one of you agrees and you just walk away. So what are you seeing in that renegotiation, Eric, that's happening with your sellers your market?
Yeah, that's a really good question because, as you know, Tina, especially being on the lending side, all that glitters isn't gold.
Yes.
I mean, you really want to take, let's say you've got four offers, potentially five offers sitting in front of you. You really want to do your work as the listing agent.
Yes.
To call those individual loan officers and find out the strength of their buyer as much as they, based upon their fiduciary responsibility,
of
their
course.
Client, can share that with you. So you're asking a lot more questions than you ever were because you have a lot more options. And if somebody throws a very large number at you, you've got to counsel your seller that may or may not be the offer we're going to want to
take. A large number meaning a large value or large price from that home.
Right.
Yes.
Can they close the loan?
Yes.
Can they, so obviously you have to do a lot more work and you really have to filter through those things so you can provide an intelligent options for your seller.
And how difficult, Eric, for you guys to really, looking at comps and seeing what's happening that you can really, because I know a lot of times in the representation with your guys, when you're going in to represent or to discuss with a seller how to market their home for price, it's like, well, I can't give you a price right now. When are we going to list it? You know, because the price can change so much in a short period of time. So how can you strategically even decide what that best offer is going to be, price-wise?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And for me, I have to, I'll be completely honest with the seller.
Uh-huh.
You know, I am no wiser than the market.
Yes.
And the market is changing daily and hourly. So, I'll defer to statistics, but I'll also, good example, the three undervalued appraisals that we got back did not take into consideration, and there's that little column about declining marketing, and so it became very clear that what was happening in terms of demand and supply was not a part of the equation in terms of establishing value.
Wow.
So the values came in low.
Yeah.
And we're scrambling. But, again, if you had any economics class ever, the first thing we learned about was the law of supply and demand.
Yes.
We have very little supply and a great deal of demand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, to just shift gears, where it's really become difficult is with buyers.
Uh-huh.
Buyers don't understand that, they have not been used to the fact that the market has, in fact, tilted. It's changed. Yeah. It's not 7-8 months ago. It's not a buyer's market. It's a seller's market.
Yeah.
And
without
so if you're going to think about it, you're not going to sleep in it.
Exactly.
Yeah. There you go.
So, and that's great, Eric. So are you seeing in your market some of the creative things that are going on with the presenting and multiple offers when it comes to the appraisal? I'm seeing things come over to my desk, contracts coming together where there's earnest money being waived. There's a lot of things. But when it comes to the appraisal, to where they're saying that the buyer will agree to pay $10,000 over the appraised value not to exceed, are you guys getting creative in how you're...
The answer is no.
Okay.
Now, is there some creativity? Sure.
Yeah.
You're shortening timelines. You're doing
that.
But you're talking about a very sophisticated buyer that has a lot of disposable income.
Yes.
That's wanting to sweeten the pie and has the ability to.
Yeah.
I'm still working in Pierce County with a middle class buyer.
Makes sense.
And as a result, You know, they don't have necessarily that money to throw. They're being very fiscally responsible. Mm-hmm. You know, you're getting a retired couple that's coming down from,
which is good because you're not having to deal with that chaos of, you know, these people that are coming in with all these creative things. Then nobody has to actually try to compete with that. If you're not, you know, you guys just have the old fashioned cash buyer that happens to come in, and that's hard to compete with anybody.
Well, yeah, that's correct. And I'm sure that there, you know, as time goes on, you know, if this bubble keeps up, mm-hmm. sure, there's going to be a lot more creativity.
So let's talk about your year-over-year appreciation in peers. Mm-hmm.
Approximately 8%, where we have double-digit in King, and 8% is a fairly substantial number.
Yes.
And we're continuing to see it go in the same direction. But remember, it, you know, appreciation goes a lot slower than depreciation.
Yes.
I mean, when it falls fast.
Yep.
The rising, you got to have a comp to support it.
Of course. And but what about best, you know, some of the best areas over in Pierce County? What are the really popular hot areas?
Well, they're probably the most coveted area, and it's amazing. King County people come down to the Proctor District or the north end of Tacoma or the Stadium District, the what we call the North Slope, and they're amazed to find homes that they'd find on Magnolia and mm-hmm. other places. And you kind of laugh, you know, you say, no, it's always been here.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that you discovered it. You know, having said that, though, we in Pierce County think in terms of commutability.
Okay.
And of course, traffic patterns in the Northwest, as we all know, are horrific. I mean, your life, it becomes dictated by your traffic patterns.
Yeah. Till we get into like 2033 and Sound Transit and all that cool stuff that's going to be coming. But we got to hold on a little longer for all that great stuff.
I could be dead by then, but that's okay. Having said that, you know, so when you're talking North Pierce, you know, Lakeland Hills, Auburn, parts of Federal Way, Browns Point, Dash Point, you know, you really see a lot more increase in value in those areas and a lot more demand because people don't want to get as far south as Graham, you know, and further south toward Spanaway where some of the new construction is because, they exacerbate that commute that much more.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. So with your buyers, I know you kind of with the interest rates are still really low, but properties are going up in value and not really sure where the market is heading and what's happening. What are you seeing with your buyers as far as that, the urgency to get out there and still fight? And then they're getting discouraged because they're coming up multiple offers. So what are you seeing buyers' emotional state as far as purchasing?
Well, what I'm doing, I'm reaching out to my database and I'm telling them I told you so. I'm telling you, you shouldn't have sat on the fence. Yep. Interest rates are starting to creep up.
Yes.
Certainly not to the, you know, 4.75, 5.5 that I had anticipated by this time because the Fed continues to keep the interest rates
down. And I anticipated
down.
Even higher. So,
well, there you go. Mm-hmm. So now I'm telling them, look, this is not going to last.
Yes.
If you're going to buy, you need to jump on it and jump on it now.
Uh-huh.
And you need to put your best foot forward and all the things you were talking about in your previous segment regarding, you know, what you look like from a financial picture to an underwriter.
Yes.
You need to be addressing those issues today. There you go.
Yep, totally agree. And it's the same, you know, it's the conversation that we've been having. It's just we're eventually the conversation's not going to be had anymore because the rates are going to go up and we're not going to see them again. So,
you know, that brings up a lot of people think, well, you know, I'm going to sit and, you know, you talk about a point increase. Well, that just got rid of 20% of the market.
Exactly.
That lower 20%, that 1% is not 1%.
Yes.
It's 20% of the market.
Yep.
Especially if you're marginal in the first place.
Exactly. We're not in a market to where we feel that we're going to, and we're at risk of our properties depreciating at all. But back in the day when there was, if, you know, rates are really low, but you're not really sure what the market's going to do and price may go down, is it better to buy now or wait until, and it's always rate or the cost is more important than price. Mm-hmm. So what I encourage, if you're listening right now, it's really about the numbers and just running them, pick up the phone, give me a call, run a cost analysis sheet to just see whatever assumptions you want to put in there. 0.5% increase in interest rate, 1% increase in interest rate, no appreciation, 5% appreciation or a decline, whatever you want to look at, and you'll be amazed and surprised to see how these numbers come up if you're anticipating that there's an increase in interest rates. So I want to talk, Eric, a couple minutes about your team, because I think it's just a it's especially in this market with everything that's going on and all the work that needs to be done in assisting with buyers or sellers, which you do both. Talk a little bit about the team concept.
Well, we've got, I have five agents that are working for me. One is a listing agent, then three are buyer's agents. And simply put, you know, the demands of both buyers and sellers are such that you have to be available when they're available.
Yes.
You know, and my team's going to be working this weekend. But if your life is dictated solely by real estate and you have no life, then, you know, we don't live to work. We work to live.
Yeah.
And so I make sure that all my team players are backed up. They, you know, you're not getting one agent, you're getting potentially four.
Yes.
And so we're very supportive of one another. And we really believe that family is first and foremost.
Yep.
And, you know, you just can't sacrifice that even for the most awesome client in the world. So we just make sure that we're there one for another. And certainly we're totally committed to our client. And that way we don't skip a beat and they won't feel that they're being slighted in any way.
Awesome. Eric, thank you so much for coming into studio. It's always a pleasure to have you come over here on our side from the South End, and just appreciate your time so much.
You know, Tina, I wish your listeners could see your beautiful smile. It is so fun for me to come in here, and I just enjoy my time every time I come.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Coming up next in the Money Hour, economic decisions without enough knowledge can lead you to serious errors in your money. Instead, make decisions based on financial knowledge. And that's why I have Gary here, Gary Castle with Mountaintop Advisor LLC, right here on 1150 AM KKNW after this short break.
This is the Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell, right here at 1150 AM KKNW, this Saturday, July 4th, a show. I hope you're enjoying time with your family and friends, maybe getting out and enjoying a little bit of the sunshine on this Independence Day. My goal is to keep you up to date on the latest news and trends in our local economy. Keep me tuned in, and I will definitely keep you informed. If you're listening to my show at a different time or day, you are listening to a rebroadcast. You can call the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com to discuss anything regarding money with myself or the guests that I have in studio today. And right now, I'm having a conversation with Gary Castle with Mountaintop Advisors LLC, a great resource to help advise you on how to manage, grow, and maintain your money. More money is a little bit less stress. Wouldn't you agree, Gary?
More money is usually better.
A little bit better. So thank you so much for coming into studio. I'm excited. The first time I've had a conversation here with you. So excited to hear your expertise and sharing with my listeners.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Tina. I appreciate it.
A little bit about Gary. He's first licensed in 1984. Gary's been in a high volume bank program and at the very well-known credit union. He has a Series 6 63 and Series 7 license, in addition to being fully licensed for life insurance and annuities, both fixed and variable. He's been a top producer many times throughout his career, board member of Auburn Rotary, formerly Boy Scout adult leader, and also, which was kind of interesting and exciting, volunteer at Seafair for over 36 years and counting, which means you'll continue to do it in the future as well.
Yep.
How exciting. I'd like to be a volunteer over at Seafair.
I think we can squeeze you in.
Yeah. Do you do it over at Tri-Cities too, or just here in our...
No, just
yeah.
here.
Yeah. A little too hot in Tri-Cities, especially with the weather that we have coming in. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about your arena and money. Investing in low interest rate world, lots of opportunity. So if interest rates are at the all-time lows, what will happen to bond values when they go up?
It's sort of like a teeter-totter. Values plummet when interest rates go up.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple math. And the dangerous part is that they will go down as a multiple of what the interest rates go up.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw that in 2013, interest rates went up not quite a percentage point, and the safest investments out there, 10-year treasuries, went down 14.1%.
Yeah, wow.
So if you're only earning 2% on your investment and it goes down over 14%, you've kind of lost 7 years of gains in a two-month period of time.
Yeah, unbelievable. And, you know, I've in educating clients, because mortgages is what I do full-time in my arena, just educating clients on mortgage interest rates, just understanding that they're tied to the bond market. So when the bond markets are trading lower, interest rates are going up. When the bond market's trading higher rates, interest rates are going down, mortgage rates. And usually opposite the stock market, there's been a little crazy stuff going on in this unique financial arena that we've been in. But usually your investors are either investing in the stock market because of the great economic news and want a higher return, or they're investing in the bond market for a little more security when there's some economic news that's not so exciting. What are you seeing right now that investors are doing in the bond market?
A lot of them, a lot of the clients that I've been dealing with don't know how much they've got in bonds. That's the part that's really dangerous to me.
Yeah, huh.
If you think about it, a lot of them are in 401ks.
Makes sense.
And in their 401k, the easiest solution is to pick one of these target date funds.
Uh-huh.
Like if I don't know if any of your listeners are in that, you know, I'm going to retire maybe in 10 years from now. They would look and say, well, I've got this fund that's a 2025 fund, and it's supposed to start off aggressive and then gradually taper off and professionally manage. Yay, let's do that. That's easy. Check the box off and ignore it.
Uh-huh.
Fidelity Investments is a pretty big player in that arena.
Sure.
Their 2025 fund is 25% in bonds currently.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
So if you've got 25% of your portfolio is in bonds and interest rates are staged to go up at some point, you're about to get hurt and they're not going to know why.
Yeah. So really understanding understanding where your money's at, whether it's where it's being played at.
Exactly.
Yeah, makes total sense. So how about the, if we talk about the stock market, if the stock market is at all-time highs, where are the buy low opportunities?
To me, there are some stocks that are probably you could buy in now at all-time highs and still probably perform pretty well.
Okay.
But it makes me kind of nervous. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, but I'm still kind of nervous about the stock market in general because it's gotten more volatile every 10 years.
Yes.
So you've got some very large players that are doing electronic trading, and they can make a bunch of trades you know, per second and kind of push pricing up and influence pricing. And then they can actually avoid those buy orders, but they've pushed the price up and then they can sell their own holdings and make some money. Sounds like manipulation. And I think it'd be very tempting if you were in a position like that to do some of that type of stuff. So I get nervous about the smaller investors not because they don't have that option. They can't play that game. So that's what's made it less stable, more volatile. So to me, when I look at the overall picture of what investments are available and where are the buy low opportunities, commercial real estate.
So how does your average Joe go out and purchase commercial real estate? Because aren't you looking at millions of dollars to do that?
You would if you were going to buy one building and go do it conventionally. And
so share some creative ways for my listeners to get into commercial real estate.
Well, the easiest way to do it is through a thing called a real estate investment trust.
Okay.
And a real estate investment trust, you've got some professionals that are buying, analyzing, and selling a commercial property in a bundle. They get a whole portfolio of these buildings together, and they're collecting rents.
Okay.
And they might be a specialist in one particular area, like apartments or office buildings, and they might be they might specialize in down in the South or in the East Coast. But they have a track record that you can look up. And in fact, in their prospectus, they're actually required to tell you how they did on all of the previous ones that they've done, that they've put together.
Okay.
So. You can do the research.
What sorts of average returns would you be sharing with your clients as far as on real estate investment trust? And is there a real estate investment trust index to compare maybe to the S&P 500 index?
Yeah, that's a great question. The problem with real estate investment trusts and real estate in a 401k or in an IRA or however you want to invest, is that a lot of people don't know about them. It's been kind of kept semi-quiet. They're considered alternative investments, and there's several different types of alternative investments, commodities and BDCs and some other stuff. I really only wanted to talk about the one because it's confusing enough as it is.
Okay. Learning something new can be confusing.
So if Oppenheimer Mutual Funds did a study in they released a study in 2012.
Okay.
October. And they said that no matter what time frame you look at, if you take all of the real estate investment trusts that are available, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and that makes up the index, and there is a REIT index.
Okay, yep.
And you compare that to the S&P 500 index, which is what most people invest in.
Yes.
The 500 largest stocks in the U.S. So if you take the, you compare those in the 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, or even 15 year histories, REITs outperform the stock market.
So if they're doing so well and performing so well, why are you not seeing more investors investing in them?
I think it's because they don't know about them.
Okay.
In fact, let me elaborate on that.
Okay.
If you go even farther to 20 years and 25 years and even 30 years, still the real estate investment trusts have outperformed the stock market.
And you would think after 20 and 30 years that that's enough time for people to, you know, to be educated and understand this great opportunity.
You'd think.
Yeah.
I think that part of the reason why the message doesn't really get out is because the large brokerage companies have got a program that they've been doing for a long time. It's been profitable.
Yeah.
And they're very large animals that don't move real quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of lumbering giants, and I don't think they like changing. It's like trying to make a battleship.
Yep, makes sense.
Direction.
Makes sense. So what type of investor do you see is using that has a good amount of real estate in their portfolios?
The big investors.
Yep. Okay.
So if you take a look at some of the endowments, if you've got Stanford and Harvard and Yale, these big endowments, donors that have graduated from there that want to, you know, keep promoting their school, they will donate a bunch of money, and that goes to scholarships to get more, you know, bright kids in there, and that in the future will also donate money.
Okay.
Investors, they've got some pretty sharp people investing those funds, and they have been making huge changes. So if you take a look at Yale as an example, Yale has reduced the amount of domestic stocks in their portfolio. Looking from 1985 to 2012, they reduced the amount of U.S. stocks by 92%. That's a pretty big, pretty big change. They also dropped the amount of cash and bonds in their portfolio by a substantial amount, and they've increased the amount of real estate in their holdings by 120%.
Wow.
And you might ask, why are they doing that? They need consistent income, kind of like a retiree does.
Okay.
They need consistent income because every year they need to be able to give out scholarships, and they need to be able to, you know, pay staff and all of those sorts of things. So they're not trying to hit a home run, but they do want to get a consistent earnings. And the people that are potentially going to donate some more money want to know that they're not mishandling things and missing the boat.
Sure.
So they've been doing very, very well. In 2013, Yale said, hey, we earned 11% over the last 10 years. The typical investor that was looking at a 60-40 stock split, which is highly recommended, very common.
Yep.
60% stocks, 40% in bonds. You divvy them all up in different categories, but you end up with that. They only did 6.8%. So 11% versus 6.8.
Yeah.
Pretty big difference.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just I personally think it's just it's important to be diversified, you know, have a great piece of your investments in all asset classes, you know, real estate, the stock market, the bond market, and just, you know, make sure you're getting all of the information so that you can make the best decisions on investing your money. Now, in getting more information on real estate investment trust, how do investors get more information on how to participate in this?
Generally, they're going to have to go to a broker, an investment advisor of some sort. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure that that person has been doing it for a while and understands. Because I remember when I first got introduced to these things, that was pretty exciting.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at some of the things they were doing, and it made a lot of sense to me, and I got real fired up. And fortunately, I found out that some of these programs didn't work very well, and there were some problems. You do need to kind of decipher which ones are actually valid and which ones are smoke and mirrors.
So I was going to ask, as far as risk, what would be an additional risk or the risk side? So that would be one of them, just not investing into the right one. What other risk do you see are attached with that? Like we have risk in everything else that we invest in. Is there any unique?
Well, I think the biggest thing with real estate investment trusts is many of them are illiquid.
Okay.
So you have to be able to say, I'm going to put this money in there.
Yes.
But I do not need it, and I will not need it for at least 6 years.
Got it.
And I've had clients tell me that.
Uh-huh.
And then 3 years later, they're saying, hey, I want to help my daughter buy a house, or I got this thing I want to do, and I kind of need to pull that money out. I'm like, wait a minute.
That's another reason diversification is good. You want to have liquid assets, and you want to have other ones that are not as liquid, because in that there's, so there's always that balance in that way. If you've got your liquid assets and maybe these investments, real estate investment trust being one of them, you've got some upside, but a downside being that it's not liquid. You can't get to the money as quickly.
Correct. Some of them are illiquid.
Yes.
So,
okay.
Yes. So that would be a reason to, limit the amount that you've got in there.
Okay.
So that in case something comes up, an emergency does, you're ready.
So how else are you advising your clients right now to really take advantage of the opportunities out there and to be financially smart with where they're putting their money?
As much as possible, like what we were talking about a little bit before during the break, is being better savers.
Yes.
And, thinking a little bit more before spending money. Use of credit cards isn't necessarily evil, but there's an awful lot more debt now than there used to be, and people are used to it. It's been so. I think paying more with cash, buying what they can afford instead of trying to have the coolest car, etc.
Being smarter with our money. You think that maybe that we've learned something from some of the challenges that we've gone through, and being a little more cautious of how we're spending, managing our money better, saving for the future, and really doing the research that's needed when making an investment decision.
Exactly. And some of the things you talk about when it comes time to buy a house, what we were talking about on the break, and be cautious. You don't necessarily have to fully extend yourself just because the bank says it's okay.
So, Gary, we were talking about residential real estate with Eric a little bit earlier in the show today, and talking about the issues that are going on, really being able to determine what the actual value of the property is. Now, talking with you, talking about commercial real estate, what's the difference between coming up with value for commercial versus residential real estate?
That's an interesting thing. There's a lot of things that come out. I'm not a commercial appraiser. But what happens is, if you think about having two pieces of vacant land, commercial land.
Okay.
One, you bought it and you're thinking it's going to go up in value later on. It's on the main drive. Right across the street, there's the exact same size, and yet it's being rented out as a parking lot. So there's income coming off of it.
Okay.
So exact same pieces of property, just one on one side of the street, one on the other.
Uh-huh.
The one that's got rental income obviously is going to be worth more money.
Of course.
So if you've got an office building and it's 50% occupied versus the exact same size building across the street that's 80% occupied, the 80% occupied building, because there's a lot of income coming in, is going to be worth an awful lot more. So one of the things when these real estate investment trusts are buying these buildings, they're looking at, can I improve the value by bumping up the amount of occupancy in it?
Okay.
Can I sell off part of the property to maybe the next door neighbor who wants to build a parking garage for his building?
Yep.
And we still have the same amount of income coming in, but now we've sold off some of our property.
So kind of could be like real estate when you get a property that might be distressed or in not as good of a condition. In your worst situation with commercial, we're talking about income revenue, but maybe we're in a residential, if you're talking about the condition of the home, you can get a really good deal on that house. And then if you're willing to put the money or put the work into it to get in a better condition, now you've just made a lot more money. Do you see that? And could that work the same in commercial as well?
Absolutely.
And seeing what the opportunity is with a bad an asset that maybe is not as appealing to the massive.
Yes. So basically what you end up with is, I kind of look at it, there's two different types of properties. One would be an opportunistic property where, yes, with the right experts coming in, they can paint it up, fix it up, and improve the value by quite a bit and then turn around and sell it later on. And the other one is the client says, I don't want to have any risks. I want to have a building that's almost 90%, 100% occupied, steady income, well-maintained, class A.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what a great topic to bring to my listeners. I appreciate it. A little bit different spin on investment opportunity and some things that maybe that you're not aware of as a listener. So thank you so much for coming in to talk with Gary. Feel free to call the show at 1-855-411-50 or online at themoneyhour.com. Gary, thank you so much for coming in studio. I so much appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Tina. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. This is Tina Mitchell, your host and mortgage expert, signing off for the day. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Enjoy your 4th of July. Great weather, great place to live here in the Northwest. And I appreciate all of you listening to the show. I'll be here next week, same time, same place, right here at 1150 AM KKNW.
The preceding program is paid for by Absolute Mortgage, a division of Pinnacle Capital Mortgage Corporation. Absolute Mortgage Company, NMLS number 81395, and Washington CL number 81395, is an equal opportunity housing lender. Tina Mitchell, MLO number 145420, is a licensed loan originator with Absolute Mortgage. Visit absoluteloans.com or call 888-90-HOMES for cost information.